From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, March 19th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
The state of Maine currently has 52 cases of COVID-19. That's including 4 hospitalizations. That information from the latest update from the Maine CDC. Maine's congressional delegation is urging the Navy to take steps to protect workers at Bath Iron Works and the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard from the spread of coronavirus, Mel Leary reports.
Representative Shelley Pingree and Jared Golden joined with Senators Angus King and Susan Collins in asking defense officials take steps to allow workers paid time off to take care of their families and themselves as the virus spreads. Collins says all 4 members are unified.
The whole Maine delegation is on the same page on this issue, and I'm pleased that we're working together.
They warn that keeping shipyard workers healthy is a matter of national security and urge the Defense Department to extend construction and repair deadlines. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine prisons and jails are stepping up cleanings, restricting visits, and taking other precautions to try to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Some jails have also begun releasing certain nonviolent offenders with input from the district attorney's office. Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce says he's released 10 prisoners from the Community Corrections Center earlier this week because they had less than 90 days left to serve. He's now looking at criteria for releasing other inmates.
We're also working on a list of people that are pre-conviction. Now, I don't have the authority for that, but trying to work with the DA's office, the judges, and the defense attorneys to actually get some bail reductions done, get some probation violations reduced, so that we can let some of those folks out, too.
Prisoners are considered a vulnerable population for infectious diseases like COVID-19 because they're housed in close proximity to one another. Joyce says last week he had 408 inmates, but this week, after steps taken by police, courts, and the DA, the population's down to 357. None of them have tested positive for the coronavirus, but Joyce says one prisoner has been quarantined after exhibiting flu-like symptoms. In weather tonight, drizzle and fog statewide with lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, showers and fog, warm with highs in the mid to upper 40s north to the low 60s interior south. With another jump in COVID-19 cases reported by the Maine CDC today, Governor Janet Mills is urging the federal government to provide more testing supplies and personal protection equipment, or PPE, to healthcare providers. Steve Missler has more.
The governor's letter addresses a shortage of PPE that Maine and other states are experiencing as they attempt to ramp up testing and get an accurate picture of the outbreak that, according to the Maine CDC, has climbed to 52 cases here. In her letter to Vice President Mike Pence and U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, Mills says the supply of gowns, masks, gloves, and testing agents is so low it could affect the state's readiness to respond to a surge in cases. Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah raised the issue in Thursday's press briefing.
I personally have indicated to the U.S. CDC, as well as to the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response's office on phone calls, that the rollout of personal protective equipment is not as fast as it needs to be.
Shah echoed Mills' call for additional distribution from the Strategic National Stockpile, and he says there's an acute need for face masks. But there have been reports that the federal government is warning that the national stockpile supply may not be enough to meet demand. And new guidance from the federal CDC suggests alternatives for healthcare providers, including the use of homemade masks. Shah also says he has been unable to obtain more information from the federal government about how President Trump plans to use the Defense Production Act, a wartime law that allows the feds to mandate the manufacturing of medical supplies.
I'm not sure what is in the offing for them, nor do I have a sense of what their ramp-up period would be. What I can tell you, what we need are personal protective equipment generally, and specifically these N95 masks that we've talked about.
The shortage of protective equipment is already a problem at Intermed in Portland, according to a statement from the large physician network. The latest reports from the Maine CDC show the highest concentration of cases in Cumberland County, where Shaw says there's also evidence of community transmission. There are now COVID-19 cases in 9 of Maine's 16 counties. The latest, a confirmed case in Hancock, was reported Thursday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
In the past week, the number of cases of COVID-19 in Maine has climbed from 1 to 52. Governor Janet Mills has said the situation will likely get worse before it gets better, and hospital bed capacity could be a major issue. Different models project that hospitals in Maine and elsewhere around the country do not have enough beds to handle a surge in patients. Patty White joins me now to talk about the projections for Maine and what's being done to prepare. So, Patty, what is the outlook for Maine as the cases of COVID-19 continue to increase?
So first, let's talk about how many hospital beds there are in Maine. And according to the Harvard Global Health Institute, which created a model to project hospital capacity, as of 2018, there were about 3,600 hospital beds in Maine, and that includes about 300 beds in intensive care units. And looking at those numbers and how many beds are typically available, Maine will only have enough hospital beds under a best-case scenario for the spread of the coronavirus. And that best-case scenario, according to this modeling from Harvard, is if only 20% of the adult population is infected with COVID-19 over the span of about a year to a year and a half. If the infection rate is higher or if it spreads more quickly, we're not going to have enough hospital beds to treat the patients who need it.
And estimates in this model are that about 1 in 5 adults who are infected will need to go to the hospital?
That's right. And of those hospitalized, another fifth are expected to be critically ill and need intensive care.
So under a best case scenario where the infection rate is low and it's spread out over a longer period of time, Maine will probably have enough beds. But what if we see a higher number of infections? How short will we be?
So let's go to a moderate scenario where 40% of the adult population is infected with COVID-19 over the course of a year. In the southern part of the state, we would need 3.5 times the number of available beds that we currently have. In the northern part of the state, we need more than double the available beds. And those are just regular hospital beds, Nora. So for the critically ill patients who need to be in intensive care units, we have far fewer available. The projections are that we have between 6 and 7 times fewer the number of ICU beds that we need. So the overall takeaway is that Maine needs to expand its hospital bed capacity even under a modest COVID-19 scenario. And we're not alone in this. Hospital beds are a constrained resource across the country.
What are hospitals saying about these projections?
They're concerned, but they're not necessarily surprised. Dr. James Jarvis from Northern Light Health said in an email that Maine hospitals are already at or near capacity during normal times. And here's what Dr. Dora Ann Mills from Maine Health had to say.
These numbers are very, very concerning, that we could very quickly, within the next 3 or 4 weeks, run out of beds in Maine if we don't act now.
And hospitals have already taken some action. The three major health systems in Maine, Maine Health, Northern Light Health, and Central Maine Healthcare, have all postponed most, if not all, elective procedures. That's one way to free up hospital beds. That also frees up staff. Another option is to set up additional beds at alternative care sites. Dr. Mills from Maine Health says those sites include tents.
And we have other, you know, there are other buildings in our communities that are designated as possible alternate care sites. And so we are in the process of looking at all of those.
And Nora, this is something that Dr. Nirav Shah, the director of the Maine Center for Disease Control, says is being explored throughout the state in conjunction with the Maine Emergency Management Agency.
And what else is being done at the state level?
Dr. Shah says health experts are working on getting a better understanding of which patients with COVID-19 can safely be cared for at home versus who really needs to be hospitalized. That could help alleviate some pressure. And Dr. Shah also said that the state is looking at staffing because if a state or hospital set up more beds, we're going to need more healthcare workers to tend to those patients. And as I mentioned earlier, staff that are being diverted away from elective surgeries would help. But for the patients that require intensive care, that staff needs more specialized training. And Dr. Shah says that's where telemedicine could help.
Among many options, so that if high numbers of people need to be on ventilators, experts from other parts of the country can adjust and fine-tune those ventilator settings on an occasional basis, even if they may not necessarily be here.
All right, we've talked about what the state and what hospitals are doing to get ready. these projections for a lack of hospital beds also underscore what the public needs to do in terms of social distancing, right?
That is a huge part of this. If you look at these projections, it's pretty startling about what we could be facing, which, of course, Italy has already experienced. And Dr. Mills from Maine Health says the key takeaway is that people really need to adhere to social distancing to flatten the curve, to slow down and spread out the number of cases here.
You can tell that that is what we absolutely have to be doing now to keep the surge down. And it's so critical because when you see these numbers that are projected of people who need hospitalization, I mean, they quickly become beyond the number of hospital beds in the state of Maine.
All right, Patty. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And you can check out the modeling from Harvard released in conjunction with ProPublica on our website, mainepublic.org. Daily life has changed drastically as Mainers take steps to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. Preparing and maintaining needed services for homeless clients has proven to be a major challenge for shelters who are dealing with limited space, supplies, and a dramatic decline in volunteers. Robbie Feinberg has that story.
Hey, thanks. Hey.
On a recent morning, Katie Spencer-White walks through the entrance of Waterville's Mid-Maine Homeless Shelter to a nearly empty lobby.
And it's so quiet. Our parking lot is usually full. You'd struggle to get a parking space. And I drove on today, and it's almost empty. So this is our new normal.
And that new normal has posed serious challenges for shelters like this one, where she serves as executive director. White says it's not easy to follow CDC-recommended social distancing guidelines in an area where almost 50 guests sleep only a few feet from each other.
It's like summer camp, very, very condensed, all under one roof, where we've got, you know, rooms of 8 beds. And then communal dining. There's lots of things that we are changing to adapt to the crisis, but it does become a matter of square footage. There's only so far you can spread people out before you hit the wall. So
the shelter has been forced to get creative.
And you can see right now we've broken all the furniture down and we're hoping...
Here in the shelter's former conference room, the tables and chairs have been pushed into a corner. The shelter plans to convert the room into a makeshift dorm. And if needed, it'll be used as an isolation space for anyone who may have been exposed to the new coronavirus. But with few medical supplies and little expertise, White is still unsure how staff will care for those in need.
It's a full house. You can't isolate people. And how do you bring employees? How do I ask staff to care for sick people without the proper equipment?
So now we are really focusing on immediate triage and making sure people have the safest possible place to stay in place and self-isolate as needed, which is not so easy.
Stephanie Prim, the executive director of the Knox County Homeless Coalition and the chair of the statewide homeless council, says shelters across Maine are wrestling with similar questions. Prim worries that as cases of COVID-19 continue to climb, the demands on service providers may only increase.
We're anticipating that. We're already seeing, as of today, some situations where family members who have been supportive of a couch surfing situation are now so fearful that they are essentially kicking people out of the household because they're worried about infection. So there's a number of things contributing to what we are anticipating as a significant wave.
Prim says state agencies have made things easier by adjusting some bureaucratic rules, and she and other advocates are pushing for policy changes within the state's general assistance program to ensure that residents who do have homes will be able to stay. But with shelters, including hers, already full, Prim says her organization is being forced to look at other options to house or isolate them.
We are actively trying to identify some empty buildings and spaces, even a hotel that might be a possibility in the area that might be able to be tapped into during this time for people that are needing a safe place to live.
And beyond housing space, providers are also struggling to find enough help. Mark Swan, the executive director of Portland-based Preble Street, says the nonprofit is searching for new volunteers after seeing a dramatic decline in recent days.
And, you know, we have 3 soup kitchens, 3 meals a day. We need a lot of volunteers, and losing so many so quickly is a challenge. And also food drives. And, you know, last week we had an annual food drive in partnership with a local company, and we went from 3,200 pounds of food, which was donated last year, to 300 pounds this year.
In an email, Maine Housing spokesperson Kara Korshen says that the agency is, quote, currently working with DHHS to help address the unique challenges homeless shelters across Maine are facing with the COVID-19 pandemic and are pursuing a range of options. DHHS Commissioner Jean Lambrew echoed that response at a press conference on Wednesday, saying the effort is being shared with nonprofit organizations and city officials across the state.
We are working with all of them to try to find pragmatic solutions that are public-privately done to ensure homeless people, like other residents of Maine, can stay safe.
But advocates warn that more supports will have to be put in place in the coming months, as layoffs and business closings could leave even more Mainers in need of social services. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Maine Senator Susan Collins says negotiations are underway between Republicans and Democrats about a third stimulus package to help provide loans and other relief to small businesses and employees affected by the coronavirus pandemic. Collins, who sits on the Appropriations Committee and the Health Committee, spoke with senior political correspondent Mel Leary.
I believe that the majority leader will introduce a comprehensive third package later today. We are beginning negotiations with our Democratic counterparts, and we've already had some informal negotiations. And I think it's imperative that we wrap up this third package as soon as possible. Otherwise, the consequences for our economy, since the first two packages dealt largely with health and safety issues, as was appropriate, but the implications for our economy really are devastating if we don't act.
Are you confident that the provisions you and Senator Rubio have been working on will be part of this? That is, loans to small businesses that can be forgiven.
I am confident that the provisions that we have developed will be included in the broader package. Our vision is to try to help small businesses and their employees survive while this epidemic runs its course. And what we are trying to do is to prevent small businesses. There's so many of them that I've heard from in the hospitality industries, such as restaurants, B&Bs, gift shops, bars, small hotels. We want to make sure that they can get federally guaranteed loans that they can use for payroll purposes to keep paychecks flowing to their workers during this time when their business has dried up through no fault of their own.
Now, some members of your caucus were opposed to sending checks directly to individuals. Has that been resolved? And if so, is it going to go to every individual, or will there be some income caps?
There will definitely be income caps if there are direct checks, which I think is another provision that is likely to be included. What I've heard discussed is there would be an income tax, an income cap of $75,000.
Do you expect that this bill can be worked out in the next couple of days?
I feel that it has to be worked out over the next few days and past either Sunday or early this weekend. And all of us have pledged that we will stay in Washington until it is resolved. By all of us, I mean all of us in the Republican caucus, and particularly those of us who have been the lead negotiators.
The president was kind of sharp with the governors, saying basically that the federal government's not going to act as a shipping clerk in terms of getting needed supplies out there. What we're hearing here locally is we need those supplies, and we need them now, particularly things like the N95 masks.
That's right, and the federal government plays a very important role. The Maine delegation had an excellent 45-minute call with the governor today, and on the top of her list was more supplies. In addition, I have been working with Maine Health in Portland about shortages that they are facing as well in their testing materials. So this is really important, and the federal government, because of the national stockpile, does play a key role. So I would disagree with the president's comments in that regard.
Last issue, Senator, you serve on both the Health Committee and, of course, on the Intelligence Committee. The New York Times is now reporting that there was an exercise done just last fall that looked at a pandemic just like we're having now. The similarities are eerie. Were you informed at all on either committee about the results of that exercise, which basically warned about some of the things we're now facing?
I was not. I am aware of it now, but we were not briefed on it. It is possible that what they call the big four, the big eight, which means the chairman and ranking members of both the House and the Senate, as well as the Senate and House leadership, were briefed about it, but the full Intelligence Committee was not.
Senator, thank you very much for taking time from negotiations to speak with us.
Thank you.
And that was senior political correspondent Mal Leary speaking with Senator Susan Collins about the latest efforts in Congress to address the coronavirus epidemic. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a special two-hour program with guest Dr. Nirav Shah of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm Nora Flaherty.